Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 53. Got Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com. He runs the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd from TheHammerSpeaks.com. Dave, short week with the Browns coming in. Thursday game at Heinz Field, 8:20 tomorrow. Coming off a nice win against the Bengals, 35-7. As we talked about Monday in our podcast, we recapped the Tomlin presser, some of his quality lines. Made the Browns out to be Super Bowl favorites, as far as I can tell. And he went through the injury report. And since then, we have gotten some news and basically not really good stuff. I think, you know, from what we talked about Monday, sounds like maybe a couple more guys are going to be out. And, of course, the news on Chris Hoke. Why don't you wrap it up for us?
Yeah, we'll leave Chris Hoke for last so we can expand on that. Lamar Woodley with that hamstring, I think the turnaround is just going to be too quick for him. He did not practice yesterday. Looks like he's going to be doubtful for this game when the injury report comes later today. Let's face it, they're not doing too much in practice. They did not work on Monday. Yesterday was a walkthrough. And, it, you know, if this guy's not even going through a walkthrough for the most part, or what they like to say, a walkthrough jog, you know, he's going to be down, I think, Thursday night. Wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders, you know, I hate to harp on this, that foot and that knee. Evidently that knee's giving him the most problem. He's listed on the injury report with the foot, but Bruce Arians said yesterday they're probably going to let him sit out. Evidently he's got some discomfort in that knee mostly, and I think they would rather have him back for the 49ers game. So they want to give him some extended time off.
I think you're in Arians. Arians' line was, you know, maybe it's time to give him 11 days of rest. And of course, with the schedule set up the way it is, this is playing heavily into some of these guys' roles.
Exactly. You know, it's almost like having a half a bye week here. So yeah, I don't think they'll miss him in this game. And if it means getting him back healthy for the rest of the year, I'm all for it. Running back Jonathan Dwyer, he didn't play many snaps late in the game against the Bengals, but evidently he's got some sort of foot problem. Had to go see the doctor on. He's going to probably be out this week. I can't see him suiting up. You kind of wonder what the seriousness of this foot problem is. Is it enough to put him on IR? We just don't know yet. So we'll have to see, you know, coming into next week where that goes. But I would expect him down this week.
So, Dave, who was that? I'm sorry. I was just,
Jonathan Dwyer.
Jonathan Dwyer, right. He, a couple late carries in the game against the Bengals and, banged up his foot.
Yeah, and let's see. We got Chris Carter's going to be down with that hamstring. Again, Arnez Battle is going to be down with his hamstring again. So already you've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about five names, I think, maybe six, that are going to be on the inactive list. So
and you throw Dixon in there, and there's your seven.
Yeah, more than likely. You know, you just don't know if the Chris Hoke, you know, neck surgery for this guy, boy, you hate to hear it. And from what I understand, it's going to be the same type of surgery, I think, that Aaron Smith had. So, and I think that surgery requires going in from the front, too. So reading the recounts of Aaron Smith that was up on Steelers.com after his surgery doesn't look like something you really look forward to. And you kind of, even though I know Chris Hoke is the most positive individual there is, much like Aaron Smith, you kind of have to wonder if much like Aaron Smith, this might be it. And we'll have to see going forward and all. But, you know, the guys, Chris Hoke, what can you say about the guy? Mr. Steeler, if you will. Never, a full-time starter, although he did fill in nicely back a few years ago when Casey Hampton was down. This year as well, too, part of the season when Casey Hampton was down. The guy is always there, probably one of the best locker room guys there is. I'm going to miss the hokey pokey dance. I really hope if somebody gets a sack this weekend like Ziggy or one of those guys up front or even Casey Hampton, how nice would it be for Casey to get a sack this week and do the hokey pokey, you know? So, but, you know, you just hate to hear about these type things. Chris Hoke will always, although never a full-time starter, you know, he'll always remember to, you know, as as being a guy to buck the undrafted free agent, you know, trend and become a starter for the Steelers for 10, 11 seasons here. So very sad to see this, if indeed this is it for him.
Very well put, Dave. A guy, I think you hit on all the highlights. A really good locker room guy, a guy a little undersized, but when asked to step in, has done the job admirably. Certainly a guy who can give Casey Hampton 10 plays off during the course of the game. But we saw it. Look, there's no question. Last year, Chris Hoke's job with Sonny Harris and some of the guys that the Steelers had in camp, Chris Hoke's job was in jeopardy, held his job. This year, same thing. 2 years in a row, they draft a defensive lineman at ends, notably ends, not nose tackles. But, his job was in jeopardy again this year, and he made the squad and performed reasonably well. But we saw, I think even before the injury, that Steve McClendon, who made the squad, moved past Hoke, and Mike Tomlin acknowledged that he moved past Hoke. And then, of course, this injury has made it, this is the end of the line for Chris Hoke. And, very few athletes want to say it's the end of the line for him or admit it, and we haven't seen Aaron Smith talk about it yet. We're not going to see Chris Hoke talk about it this year. But the reality is, not only is there a performance issue for these guys, they're not roster spots, they're not dollars available for them. And, you hate to be cold and crass about the business side of things when you're talking about specifically guys who have been in the Steeler organization for a long time. And you and I are going to do a piece on this Friday about guys who, because we got some extra time, got guys Friday or maybe Monday, guys who aren't going to be around next year. And certainly, that list is led with Hines Ward, Aaron Smith, and Chris Hoke. I would say, certainly the first two, the last two probably I'm 100% sure aren't going to be back. Hines Ward, maybe the door is cracked open, but at $4 million in his production, those are going to be interesting decisions. But we'll get into that on Monday.
Yeah, interesting note on top of that. I heard I keep in contact with Anthony Gray. Everybody remembers him, the guy, the young nose tackle that was in camp that was released and all like that. He really let me know that Hoke really helped him during training camp, always made him do some extra reps, always making sure Anthony knew what his assignments were and all like that. And this is a guy that hasn't been with the Steelers since training camp. He wouldn't have to say anything like that, so it sounds sincere. And who knows, down the line with Hoke, the way he is, maybe there's some coaching in the future if that's what he wants to do. But once again, very, very sad. Chris, has always been one of, the fringe great players of the Steelers, in my opinion.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, Dave, I had a little bit of a jackass line on Twitter yesterday when Scott Brown said, Steve McClendon, he quoted Steve McClendon as saying, I took it harder than Chris Hoke did hearing about his injury. And I said, athletes say some dumb things. It's Chris Hoke's career. Obviously, he takes it hard. But the point being, I was a little flippant in saying that, the point being that Steve McClendon felt very much the same way. He said Chris Hoke was in his ear all the time in film sessions, teaching him and doing stuff. And it shows the respect that the young guys have for Chris Hoke and what he's done for the team. So well pointed out by you. Also, I want to just add that I didn't add at the top of the show, but we will be having Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal on the second half of this show, previewing the Browns. And as always, we try to get the best guys we got. And Nate, we're looking forward to having Nate on. And you can follow Nate on Twitter at ABJ, which is Akron Beacon Journal _Browns. So we'll have him on for the second part here. As you posted on your website, Dave, Antonio Brown named the AFC special teams player of the week. 60-yard punt return for a touchdown kind of sealed the game for the Steelers. Their fourth touchdown of the quarter, 28 points, put them up 28-7 at the half. So well deserved. He has been a dynamic player all year long. Nice to see him to get that. And Mike Tomlin can no longer say he hasn't taken one to the house yet. So great for him. And then Dave, let's get into as you have also put on your website, a couple things that I really enjoy seeing every week, and I think our listeners like hearing about, are one, the participation, particularly on the offense. We talked at length about the defensive changes the Steelers made with taking Ryan Clark out of some of the sub packages and using more cornerbacks. But let's talk about the participation on offense and the offensive line breakdown.
The offensive line. What can you say? I mean, It was an absolute fantastic performance. Marquise Pouncey, boy, if this guy lost weight you wouldn't have known it, he did not look weak at all. He really looked good in both pass protection and run blocking. Doug Legursky, although Doug Legursky finished second to Pouncey, for a player that had quite a few snaps. Really, really good. He did have the few pressures in the game. I thought those were what I would call manageable pressures. One sack, one of the three sacks, one of those was on Max Starks, and that was an easy one to call. One of the ones, Ben stepped into the pocket, and Legursky's guy slid off of him and got Ben, and that was hard to pin on Legursky, but really a good job of doing that trap blocking that we talked about the other day in the recap episode. What a good game all the way around for him, especially after he moved to center after Pouncey left because of the blowout. Ramon Foster, his score really doesn't reflect how good he played in that game. Two pressures allowed, but I thought he really moved good, especially to the left side. We're starting to see him pull out to the left more and more in some pass protection, almost like a molly block where he swings way outside of the left tackle from the right guard spot to make a block. He had a very nice bury early in, I think, the first series for the Steelers, either the first or second series. I think it was the first. Marcus Gilbert, a great game, a great second time around against the Bengals. Robert Gathers, if you remember, kind of got the best of him in that first game a few weeks ago. So great game by Marcus Gilbert. Really, there was not much not to like, David, in this game from an offensive line standpoint. It'll be interesting on this short week now to see how they're able to bounce back if they can put up the same type of performance, especially in the running game against a team like the Browns who are susceptible to the run. As far as the participation chart for the offense, there weren't really too many surprises in my opinion. Kimo Atu got into the game late after Legursky moved to center there. We saw Charlie Batch in this game. Let's see. Wes Saunders had 23 non-penalty snaps in this game. That's one thing we're starting to see. You know, media really made a pretty big deal about it, I thought, this week, at least the national media, about how the Steelers are using three tight end sets and all. That's really not new for us. You know, maybe they're using it a little bit more than normal, but they're also getting, still a lot of the two tight end formations, too. What makes the Steelers' offense so deadly, in my opinion, is to be able to give the appearance of run, yet pass out of that formation. So, you know, going forward, that's what we're looking for. We want to give uncertainty to the defense if we're able to run out of pass formations, and if we're able to pass out of run formations, the less predictable you're going to be. So not too many surprises as far as a participation chart goes this week.
Yeah, Dave, I guess
Hines Ward did have 20 non-penalty snaps, so I told you he'd get back up in the 20s.
Yeah, he got up back up in the 20s because they were up 35-7.
Bruce Arians, I got to go back and look at the tape. Bruce Arians said yesterday they asked him, why didn't you feed the fourth quarter? Why didn't you feed the ball to Hines more? And Bruce said they knew what was coming and it was double covering him.
Yeah, they're double covering him. Arians said, "Hey, we try, but they're double covering him." And I liked Arians' response because Tomlin has really dodged this question. But Arians, when asked, is getting 1,000 catches important to you? And he said, it's incredibly important to me because of the time we've spent together, Hines and I have spent together. But from a team perspective, zero. It's not important. But that's interesting, because Arians is the guy making the play calls. So, he can say what he wants to say, and obviously he can't deviate from what he thinks the best game plan is. But in terms of personnel packages and stuff, late in the game, he got 20 snaps, and the Bengals double covering Hines Ward. That's just crazy, crazy stuff there.
Yeah, Alan Gifford, the guy who does a lot of my charting for the defense, he asked about that too. I think he's going to go back through the game today and double check some of that for me. But I think, Arians, he likes spreading on a load of bullcrap, every now and again. So that might just have been a little bit of tongue-in-cheek there. I was going to ask you about this. Do you remember the play, I think it was third quarter, when they threw that kind of that quick pass to Hines? I'm trying to think what the setup was there. I don't have that info in front of me. But after that, they showed Ben look to the sideline and kind of give that look of his, and he kind of held his hands up and, like, calm it down. Do you remember that sequence?
Don't remember that.
And the people could only, you know, evidently, because I don't listen to the game broadcast live. I always listen to the radio broadcast. I don't get to hear the TV broadcast till the second time through, just because I'd much rather listen to the radio live to go along with the game. But they're even they were even wondering, you know, was it because they were trying to feed the ball to Hines too much? Was somebody just yelling in his ear constantly? But if you go back through that game again, I'll try to find the time of game for you on that, but it's a real interesting look Ben has over to the sideline and raising his hands up like enough or something like that. So it'd be interesting. We'll never get to the bottom of it, but I'll just alert you to that.
Interesting stuff, Dave. The only thing that jumped out to me in terms of the participation was Antonio Brown only being on the field for 28 offensive snaps. And obviously with Hines getting 20, with the Steelers going with a lot of 2 and 3 tight end sets, and Wes Saunders getting 22 or 23 plays, that kept him off the field. And, you know, nature of the game certainly played a role, the score and everything like that. But that was the only thing that I thought was particularly interesting there. Dave, getting into the Browns, and as I said, we're gonna get an in-depth conversation of the Browns with our beat writer Nate Ulrich coming up here in 5 or 10 minutes. But just an overview of this team. They come into the game 4-8. You look at Dave. When I look at their roster and I go down their depth chart, I look and say, you know, this team, they have some talent on this team. You look at the right side of their offensive line with Joe Thomas, and you say, you know, they got some talent there. Obviously, injuries have played, wreaked havoc with their backfield. Both Hardesty and Peyton Hillis have been hurt a lot. But, you know, you have two talented guys there. You look and you say, you have Greg Little, you have Masekwai, Josh Cribbs. Greg Little's a rookie, but he's a guy who, he's not A.J. Green, but he's a guy who's going to be a good receiver in this league. Josh Cribbs obviously does a lot of dynamic stuff. Alec Mack at center offensively, and Ben Watson at tight end. That's a pretty good group, and obviously the jury's out on Colt McCoy offensively. Then you go to the defensive side of the ball, and you say, you look at their line, and you say, okay, you know, Taylor and Sheard, two guys, both rookies, right, I think, at left end and at one of the defensive tackles, good young players. And you look in the secondary, you say Joe Hayden, you see, T.J. Ward. You say, okay, you know, good players, but glaring holes at other places. You've got guys who may have the makings of a good team, and then guys who shouldn't be on the roster who are starting.
Yeah, and I think you said Joe Thomas on the right side. Yeah, Joe's on the left side along with the rookie Pinkston there. Joe Thomas, absolutely fantastic. This guy's a beast. This guy's going to cause James Harrison some problems. Alex Mack, their center, also I think having a good season from what I have seen. Pashos on the other side having a good season. So if you look back at that Baltimore game too, and over the last few weeks with these wide receivers of theirs, boy, quite a few drops. I mean, these guys cannot hold on to the ball. That's been a lot of their problem. Now, of course, they've been without Peyton Hillis, you know, for quite a few games this year. He ran real hard inside against the Ravens there. The problems with the Browns, they just couldn't, you know, they'd move the ball and then they'd stall. And, Ben Watson, we saw what Ben Watson could do in one of the games last year against the Steelers, albeit kind of late. I think he's still, one of the favorite targets of Colt McCoy. He's a much better pass blocker, I think, than he is a receiver, but I think he can still get it done in the passing game. Greg Little, he's just I don't know, the talent's there, I guess. It just really has not shown itself this year. Passing game just not good, in my opinion, with his route running and all. I'm not going to say that he's going to be one of the greats in the game just yet, on the level of an A.J. Green. I think A.J. Green's light years ahead of him.
This kid's a rookie. He's got 50 catches. He's going to finish the season with, 65, 70 catches. He has justified his draft position.
We'll see. I'm just not sold on him, David. I just can't agree with you from a few games that I've seen and all thus far. I just can't agree yet he's going to justify. What round was he drafted in?
I think he went second round, right?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I don't know about him. Jury's still out in my head.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't mean to say, as I said, I'm not comparing him to AJ Green. I'm just saying he's a rookie receiver who's having an impact. Now maybe that's because they don't have anybody else who can play the position. But
yeah, you look at Massaquoi. I don't Massaquoi. I think he'll be out of the league before you know it. You know. I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm just not sold on Little just yet. So on the defensive side of the ball, Jabal Sheard, boy, the boy from Pitt, probably one of their brightest spots. Now that guy is going to be for real and be around in their 4-3 defense for a while. Joe Hayden, I think, is really going to be around for a while as far as a good corner goes for them. And I like what DeQuell Jackson's doing as far as linebacker for them. They've got some talent there. And look, their defense has they're horrible against the run right now. This is partly because the young guys still trying to feel their way up front, in my opinion, from what I've seen. Boy, the Ravens just ran right on over them in this game to a tune of 200-something yards, both inside and outside. Now, they do have a great offensive line, though, too, the Ravens. So that helped out, especially in the running game. Their defensive stats, though, passing stats, though, I think they're a little bit deceiving there because teams have been able to run so good on the Browns this year. This is a defense at passing yards per game, I think, are ranked first in the league. Passing yards per play, they're ranked seventh in the league. But when you go back, I don't know if you saw, I got a new stat I'm fascinated with, and it's that just a net yards per passing attempt differential stat. I posted both the offense and defense numbers from week 13 for the season to give everybody an update where everything is. And the Browns' pass defense is not bad, but it sits right at about the average number when you look at that adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat. So, I don't think they're as good as they're being promoted, but I also don't think that they've been tested like they should be. I think teams are running on them first and passing second. So I fully expect the Steelers to run on these guys, especially on a short week here. And don't get me wrong, there's going to be passing in this game with Ben Roethlisberger and Bruce Arians, but I think you are going to see a lot of 2 and 3 tight ends to try to attack this front running the football against the Browns. And I think we're just going to try to shorten this game and get the hell out of there.
Yeah, I think that's right. And just to look at their draft class, a reasonably good draft. You'll remember they made this big trade when they traded their top pick to Atlanta, and Atlanta moved up to take out Julio Jones, and I think it was a fantastic trade for the Browns. But so they had the 21st pick in the first round. They took Phil Taylor, who's starting at nose tackle, with the 37th pick, their first pick in the second round, their actual pick. They took Sheard out of Pitt, and he's starting at end. And then they took Greg Little with the 59th pick. And what's interesting is Torrey Smith of Maryland, who went to the Ravens, went the pick before that. And then they had two picks in the fourth round. They took the tight end from USC and the fullback from Stanford, Cameron, and I don't know how you say it, Owen Marisick.
Yes.
And then Pinkston went in the fifth round, the offensive tackle. They acquired that pick in a trade as well. So it looks like a really good draft for them, some quality guys who are going to help them down the road. And they'll have a couple more picks next year because of that Julio Jones trade. And obviously they're going to have a high pick in the draft. So if nothing else, you think Mike Holmgren maybe has these guys headed in the right direction. Now, I thought the most interesting comment that I saw out of the media covering the Browns this week was that Pat Shurmur, this is the first time he will have faced the Steelers, and he said what he's learned is that the AFC North is even more physical than he imagined. And that was an interesting comment, and he's going to see some more of that Thursday night.
Oh, without a doubt. They're kind of banged up a little bit. T.J. Ward, who I think really is a good young, hard-hitting safety, kind of that linebacker, that hybrid linebacker safety type mold, in my opinion. He's been out for a while. He's not going to play in this game. Quentin Spears, the linebacker, he's not going to play in this game for him. I think everybody else on their injury report has a good shot at playing. Colt McCoy's banged up a little bit, but with a knee, he's going to play. Peyton Hillis, I think, has a hip problem, but he's going to play as well, too. So the key to this game is to put Colt McCoy in third down situations. You've got to stop their run early, put them in third down situations, get off the field on third down, get the Steelers' offense back out on the field, try to run the ball, initially as best as you can. I really like what Rashard Mendenhall and Isaac Redman did last week. I'm not so convinced you're going to see as much of the guard pulling this week on kind of that counter lead type stuff. I think you're going to see more of the stuff like the 14 straight and the 22 double that they kind of like to run. I think the Browns defense is going to be susceptible to that. And also I think the center of the field with tight end Heath Miller right down the seam, making those linebackers play in the middle there and making the safeties kind of protect that middle of the field is going to be key in this game. It would not surprise me to see them use Hines on some third downs across the middle there and to use Heath Miller as well, too, in converting some third downs this week.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. You want to get ahead in this game early and be able to run clock and put this thing away. I've said in the past couple of weeks, I think the Browns are probably a better team than their record indicates, 4-8 coming in. They played the Bengals tough. They weren't great against the Ravens this past week, as you pointed out. But they're not a rollover team. I don't think they're as good as the Dolphins, who are the team that has come on most in the NFL since the kind of the first quarter of the season. But I think the Browns are a team that's improving, and that's their objective, and certainly they'd like to win this game, but I think they're definitely trying to be competitive in this game is what they should probably feel is an achievement. Dave, just in terms of general topics, anything that we've kind of missed before we get into our interview with Nate Ulrich of the Beacon Journal, Akron Beacon Journal?
I think the thing that came out with Rooney yesterday, because the NFL was over there in Ireland, trying to finalize some stuff to get a game over there in Ireland. Of course, Dan Rooney wants the Steelers to play in the game, but of course they're not going to give up a home game to do it. So it looked like they had the recon people from the NFL out there this week. They liked what they saw. A lot of people have mixed feelings on the Steelers playing over there and the NFL trying to play overseas. In general, how do you feel about that?
Well, it's interesting. Peter King talks about this frequently, and he's convinced that even maybe within the next 10 years, there'll be a franchise there. I don't know that we see the thing about getting a franchise there is 32 is such a wonderfully round, nice number. And, I've tweeted over the past kind of 2 weeks that, I put the shelf life on Jacksonville being in Jacksonville at 3 or 4 years. And I think they go to LA, and I don't see what franchise then moves to be in London. The whole Jacksonville, obviously the change of ownership this past week and every 2 weeks ago, everybody's saying all the right things about staying in Jacksonville, and the guy is going to buy a house in Jacksonville and committed to that. Well, that's nice and interesting, but if I'm buying that franchise for whatever $100 million he bought it and know that I can add $300 million of value the minute I move it to Los Angeles, just get the moving trucks ready.
Yeah. I'm not convinced long term that an NFL franchise will work overseas either. I mean, look at what NFL Europe is. Look, their football is soccer over there. Let's not kid around, and think that it's going to compete on that level over there. I appreciate what they're trying to do as far as expanding the game and make more money, but I just don't think that's an answer. I think throwing them a bone every once in a while with a game over there is nice. But I just don't see the success long term. What do you think about this game? Shall we put our predictions out there for this game?
Yeah, let's I'll let you take this one first. I'll let you get at it.
Okay, they came into this week 15. I think the very first line on this thing was 15.5 Steelers, okay? And I think it was based on maybe a few injury concerns on the Brown side of the ball. It looks like, this thing's about 14 now. Is that kind of what you're seeing?
I am seeing. That's exactly what I'm seeing.
You know, 14's a big number for a short week. The Steelers are going to win this game, I think. I think there'll be plenty to bitch about after this game because I don't think they're going to blow the Browns out like they did the Bengals. I don't think it'll be as nerve-wracking as the KC Chiefs game. So I think this game is going to be somewhere in between. So I'm going to call this 24-13 Steelers. So that would mean what? That means
they don't cover.
That means they don't cover.
Dave, I don't think other than the Houston game where I picked the Steelers to lose, I think that I've had them covering every week. And I'm with you. I think the short week, the Steelers trying to run clock. I don't love the 14 number, but I'm going to put it right on the line. I'm going to say Steelers 27, Browns 13.
Okay, good stuff. As long as the Steelers don't turn the ball over in this game or do anything stupid or any big injuries or whatnot, they should win this game. Of course, we both kind of thought they'd blow out the Chiefs, and they didn't. So if they don't blow out the Browns this time around at home, I'm sure the sky will be falling. Crowd will be very, very active on Friday morning.
Yeah, there. Let's just say if Colt McCoy is driving late in the game and the Browns have a chance to win, we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Absolutely.
All right, Dave, well, let's get to our interview with Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal. And as mentioned, you can follow Nate at @ABJ_Browns. We'll be right back talking to Nate. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. We're pleased to have as our guest Nate Ulrich from the Akron Beacon Journal. Nate, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Nate, let's open up. I know we just talked about the Steeler injury report. We've gone through that with our listeners. Can you give us an up-to-date status of the Browns?
Sure. T.J. Ward is going to be out for his fourth consecutive game. That's the second-year strong safety for the Browns, who was having a pretty good season until he sprained his right foot in early November against the Houston Texans. He's really the only significant scratch for the Browns. Usama Young fills in when Ward is sidelined, and rookie seventh-round pick Eric Hag actually rotates with Young at strong safety, and they put Hag in whenever they switch to their nickel defense. In terms of the other injuries, the big ones are, you know, Peyton Hillis. He's been hurt all year. I mean, he's had a problem with his left hamstring. He's missed several games because of it. And now, this past Sunday against the Ravens, he hurt his left hip. So he's been banged up all season. He is listed as questionable for this game. And the other big one on the Brown side is Colt McCoy. He's been dealing with right shoulder, right elbow injuries the past few weeks. And the latest is he has a sprained right knee. But he's listed as probable. He practiced all week, which obviously was a short week because of the Thursday night game. And Hillis also practiced. He was limited, but they both said that they expect to play tomorrow and should be good to go.
Nate, if you're coming into the season, I know expectations weren't great for the Browns, but here we are three quarters of the way through. The team is 4-8. Where do you think kind of both the fan base from an external point of view and internally from the GM to the coaching staff to the players, how do they look at where they are so far this season?
I think they look at it a lot differently. I think the fans are fed up. They're tired of waiting. They want a winner. And I think the Browns look at it like this. Hey, this is Mike Holmgren, second year as president. Pat Shurmur's first year as coach. And it's going to take time for them to build what they want to build. And a lot of people correctly say that Mike Holmgren wasted a year by keeping Eric Mangini around when their two philosophies weren't going to mesh anyhow. So he waited that year. He kept Mangini. I think it was a big mistake just because they weren't going to be on the same page. And, now he has his hand-picked guy in Shurmur. They're on the same page. But really, it's like year one, even though it's really year two with Holmgren. But it's the first year with Holmgren, Shermer, and GM Tom Heckert all together. So, you know, obviously it's not going to be a quick thing. You know, they're not going to be able to turn it around overnight or, you know, over a season, probably not two. You know, they're a few years away. So the fans don't like it, and it's understandable. But the guys who are here in place, they've got to, you know, have time to build what they want to build, and nobody wants to hear it when they're paying all that money for tickets. But that's just the reality of it.
Nate, you talked about the future there. You know, looking at the 2011 draft class for the Browns. You know, let's start with Phil Taylor, Jabal Sheard out of Pitt, who we've seen before. Greg Little out of North Carolina, wide receiver. Now, David and I had a little bit of difference in opinion on Greg Little, but can you give me a rough sketch of where you think those three guys are at right now?
All right, well, I'll start with Taylor because he was picked first out of the three. He's had an up-and-down season, but he's really flashed. I mean, when he flashes, he really flashes, and he looks like a legitimate, you know, upper echelon defensive tackle. I mean, I think the big thing with him is going to be consistency. You know, he struggled with weight in college, and, you know, that was one of the knocks on him. And just another knock was, well, does he play, you know, with the big guys, it often is a knock. Does he always play hard? Does he take plays off, that kind of thing? I think the thing that the Browns are hoping helps in that capacity, and I think it actually will, is they have a big man, Ataba Rubin, their other defensive tackle, who plays as hard, if not harder, than any defensive lineman his size in the NFL. I mean, the guy is always hustling. He makes plays that no other, or almost no other defensive tackle makes, just in terms of chasing guys down. So they're hoping that rubs off on Phil Taylor, and I think it has to some extent. If it continues to, and he can be more consistent instead of having kind of a roller coaster type season, and he can just be productive and flash every week, then he's going to be well worth the 21st overall pick. In terms of Jabal Sheard, he leads the team with 5.5 sacks. He's really good at forcing a quarterback to fumble. He's got a streak going in three games that he's had a strip sack. So that's promising. And I guess the thing with him is, you know, you want him to, and the same thing for Taylor, the Browns defense, you know, they're ranked, you know, top 10 for most of the season, you know, and they might be ranked sixth overall, but it's a little deceiving because they're near the bottom of the league in against the run. And you want both of those guys to help with that, obviously. That's why, you know, the Browns use their first two picks on defensive linemen for the first time in franchise history. They need those guys to be the anchors and to shore up that front in the new 4-3 defense. So when teams are running against the Browns like they have, that's not a good sign, but, you know, these guys are young, and they hope that they're going to get better in that area too. So I think Sheard has been good, especially the pass rusher. Needs to get better against the run. I think they scouted him. When they scouted him, I think they were a little off in their judgment because he played left end at Pitt. They thought he could switch to right end in the NFL. They put him there during training camp in the preseason and the first regular season game, and it didn't work out, so they moved him back to left end. That's fine, you know. If you can be productive at either end, he's still a good pick. But it did mess with their plans a little bit because they have another guy, Jamie Mitchell, who's really only a left end, and they, you know, kind of had to push him over to the right side because of Sheard. So with Greg Little, man, he's been probably the most inconsistent of the group because you see him look like a playmaker at times. You see him make catches. You see him fight for yards. You see how he's big, physical. I mean, he has the body of an elite NFL player. But you also see 11 drops. I think he's tied for the lead in the NFL with drops this season. and I think he's had 6 in the past 2 games. So, and you know, it's not just something that you know, all of a sudden popped up, you know, through training camp, through the preseason. I mean, he would go through practices where he would have 4 or 5 drops. I mean, it was unbelievable. And then he'd come back and he'd have a decent day. And then the next day, 3, 4 drops. So I think a lot of it with him is mental. And if he can figure out how to kind of control that and become more consistent, he might be a legitimate playmaker. But I don't think he's ever going to be a number one receiver. And they still lack that guy. So they're going to have to find him eventually.
Yeah, you talked about the rankings there for a moment there, and the defensive rankings. You know, when you look at it, it's kind of deceiving, I guess, for the Browns because they've got the number one ranking in passing yards per game. But, you know, when you look at the rushing yards per game, where they rank, I think the 31st in the league in that category. Is the pass defense okay, or is it just really not tested because teams are able to run on them like the Ravens were able to do this past week?
You hit the nail on the head there. it's kind of a mirage. I mean, you like the secondary. They got Joe Hayden, who's, I think, you know, if he's not an elite corner yet, he's approaching that status. T.J. Ward, who I mentioned earlier, he's been hurt for a while and is out again this week, but he really was coming on strong this season. And then you got, you know, a free agent pickup who's played nickelback for him this season, Dimitri Patterson. He came over from the Eagles, and I thought he's been playing well. But you've also got, you know, Sheldon Brown, he's an older corner, and a lot of people think that, you know, he's lost a step, and I think they'd be correct. And he gives up some plays, and it's just one of those things where, you know, they're probably the strength of the team, the secondary, but they're still not that great, but they have that number one ranked defense because everybody can run all over them. So that number one ranked pass defense because everyone can run all over them, like you said. And yeah, they're ranked near the bottom of the league in rushing defense. They're ranked 31st. They fell from 6th overall defense to 8th overall, and they're still first against the pass, even though that's kind of a flimsy ranking.
Hey, Nate, I got cut out a little bit. I'm having some technical problems, but I don't know if Dave touched on the Mike Silver story with Colt McCoy. I'm sure you saw it. He wrote an article last week on yahoosports.com talking about really, it sounded almost kind of hazing tactics by the coaching staff, by Mangini, by the offensive coordinator. Can you shed some light on whether that was an accurate report and what you felt around the team last year and what the difference might be this year?
Well, I have no doubt that kind of stuff went on. It's kind of a reoccurring story that's been written a few times, and the first time that it was written was actually by Colt McCoy to some extent. He came out with a book called Growing Up Colt, and in that book, which was released this past summer, he states that he was treated like a leper by the coaching staff. And now I think the more and more he's asked about that, he kind of reveals what he meant by that. And obviously that really came out in the Silver story more than any other story that's been written about that. But yeah, I mean, I guess that was kind of the theme for his rookie season in his mind. He was tested. He was pushed. And he was, in the view of the coaches, they're toughened up. I think that that's what the goal was. And listen, I mean, was it right? Was it wrong? I don't know about that. I don't think, you know, it certainly doesn't sound like it was very, very polite interaction. And, but, you know, this is the NFL, this is football, and this is Eric Mangini, this is his staff, Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator from the Bill Belichick tree. You know, these guys are tough coaches, and Colt, I'm sure, is not the only player who's gone through this. And I actually am glad that the Silver story pointed out something that Alex Mack, the center, said. He said that he went to the something to the effect that the coaches hazed him more than the players ever did. So it's not like Colt was the only player who's ever endured this kind of treatment. This is what these coaches do to test you, to thicken your skin, and to see what you're made of. So I kind of don't really buy into, although I don't want to say that Colt wasn't mistreated or anything, because I don't know for sure, and I do believe that this stuff went on, but I don't want to make him sound like a victim either.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Well, how would you – I know that his play hasn't reached the level that maybe people expected. I know when he made his first start against the Steelers last year, I was really impressed with what he did. I've seen a few of the Browns games this year. It seems to be up and down. What's your sense of his grasp of the offense and how he's improving as a quarterback?
Well, it's the biggest question the Browns face right now. Is he good enough to be the guy moving forward? Are they going to have to draft a guy to become their quarterback of the future? At this point, I'm not convinced they've decided, but I think that they're leaning toward no. I think that, and no being the answer to whether he's the quarterback of the future. It's one of those things where, you know, the Browns have played 12 games this season. Colt started all of them. He started 8 last season. So that's 20 starts. And you got to think about what has he done in 20 starts. And, you know, the record obviously isn't there for the team and for Colt. But more important, I think that you aren't really – there's nothing there where you're really blown away where you can say, okay, this is a clear-cut sign that he is the guy. You know, and I think his best game was probably against the Jets last season when the Browns lost in overtime. And, you know, I think another pretty solid game he had was this season against the Colts, who we all know have struggled this year. But I just, other than those, it's just what really sticks out, what really stands out. And I think that when you're asking yourself that question, you really have to dig and search and to try to come up with one or two decent games. I don't think that bodes well for him. You know, they could give him a shot, you know, beyond this season. But, like I said, they're going to evaluate him at the end of this season based on the entire year. And they're going to possibly, you know, get their guy in the draft. But really, I'm not sure that they've made up their mind on that yet.
I'm sure you heard the quote. We like to call them Tomlin-isms, you know, in Steeler Nation. Tomlin said, as far as Joshua Cribbs went, that we've been dead Indians in his cowboy movie before. And it really, Florida's the media really got a good chuckle out of it. But, you know, talking about Cribbs, we do know we have been dead Indians in his cowboy movies before. But outside of his punt return, kick return duties and all like that, we noticed, you know, last week against the Ravens, no targets for him, and this being a week after he got pretty vocal about being tired of losing and all like that, have they kind of lost him now? You know, why isn't he more? You know, I mean, best playmaker probably, you know, on the field, and why isn't he getting the ball more?
Well, he's wondering the same thing, but he won't really come out and flat out say it. He'll just suggest it, you know, in every way possible. But I think the answer is, you know, they've really been trying to turn Greg Little into the playmaker they think he can be. And he'll get targets sometimes, you know, double-digit targets, you know. And I've noticed that couple times that Josh Cribbs has really vented after a game this season, they happen to be games in which Greg Little was targeted by far the most of anyone. So I think he looks at Greg Little, and I think he wonders, why am I not getting those opportunities? And The answer is really because, you know, the Browns invested a second-round pick in Greg Little. They want him to be their top playmaker. And I don't think Josh Cribbs, although he has scored a few touchdowns as a receiver this season and has definitely shown some improvement as a receiver, I think he's, at the end of the day, I think he's really a special teams guy. I think he's a great special teams guy, or at least was a great special teams guy. But I don't think he is, you know, a guy who needs to be targeted a dozen times. And I think sometimes when guys are targeted a dozen times and it's not him, I think he, that kind of, you know, rubs him the wrong way. And he says, hey, he says to himself, I want to be the guy who's really involved. I can help this team. I can, you know, I can carry this team. I can make big plays. And I just think the coaching staff views him in a different light than the way he views himself.
Is the game plan tomorrow night for the Browns going to be try to run Peyton Hillis and I guess Hardesty, 20 times or 25, 30 times in this game combined? Is that going to be the game plan, a lot of short, quick passes to get the ball out? Is that kind of what you're expecting unless they fall behind big?
Yeah, I would expect that. I saw a stat today that Mike Mayock mentioned from NFL Network, and he said that in the past two games, the Browns have thrown 70 passes, and I think he said 55 were within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. So that kind of gives you an idea of what they try to do. I mean, that's kind of, you know, the Holmgren version of the West Coast offense. And, you know, it's short, quick-hitting passes, and they try to get yards after catch, after the completion. But that hasn't necessarily worked out very well this season. obviously, they struggled mightily on offense. And Hillis has been hurt all season. And it definitely changes the game when he's in there and he's healthy. I think it changes the way defenses treat the Browns. I think it changes things not just for the running game, obviously, but for the passing game and for McCoy. And that kind of goes back to the evaluation of McCoy. A lot of people ask, well, how can you fairly judge him when the offensive line has struggled? Hillis has been hurt for virtually the entire season, and you don't have any real dynamic playmakers at wide receiver, and that's a really good question. They've ultimately just have to ask him, is he making the plays that he should make? But not to get too off track there, but yeah, I think the plan would be to run a lot and obviously those quick hitting passes. But you know, if they fall behind, which obviously that could happen, and it's likely that could happen, then it, you know, they would probably have to abandon that.
Before I get you out of here, do you have a prediction for us for the game?
Yeah, I went Steelers 27-13.
I think that's what I told David as well. I see them actually covering. The spread's right around 14.5 or so right now, and I actually see the Browns covering this just barely, but I see a Steelers win. But hey, Nate, we certainly do appreciate your time. We know you're a busy guy covering the beat for the Browns there, and for our listeners, we're getting the go ahead and give them, we said it in the top of the show, but give them your Twitter handle real quick.
Okay, it's for the Akron Beacon Journal, and it's ABJ Browns.
Okay,
for Akron Beacon Journal, and everything's on Ohio.com, too. They can find everything that way, too.
All right, good deal. We'll be sending folks your way when I get this podcast up and all like that. And, you know, we hope to possibly have you on week 17 or so, maybe do this thing again for about 20 minutes.
Okay, sounds good. Just let me know.
All right, Nate, thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, bye-bye.